So welcome back to Hayden's Entertainment Hour. Yes, this podcast is still retired. It is not making an official comeback or anything like that. Long time ago, me and Danny had a joke, probably beginning of summer, about The Exorcist Believer and Five Nights at Freddy's. And we were like, you know, what if these movies are just so bad to the point where we just kind of review them, you know? Like, what if we just came back as, like, a joke to review both of these movies? And so, you know, the trailers kept coming out. The reviews started pouring out. You consider The Exorcist one of the greatest movies of all time, and just an amazing movie in general.
It is a very highly rated movie to me. I think it is kind of one of those lightning in a bottle type movies where all of the attempts to recreate the magic have all failed.
Yeah.
Remember that movie Saint Maud from a few years ago? Yeah. I was very excited for that movie because we both thought it was going to be very good because it's an A24 film.
Yeah.
I kept saying before we ever watched it, I kept saying, oh, this could be the new Exorcist. This could be like the new movie that fills in that slot of like, oh, the scariest movie of like this era.
Yeah.
It's no. And this movie here.
Yeah, it's a movie, isn't it? So I'll make a plug before we start into the review. So I recently went to a Halloween Horror Nights Year 32 in Orlando, Florida. Every year I've gone to Halloween
old
Horror Nights.
Old enough to drink.
Yeah, I'm 23 now. Isn't that great?
No, Halloween Horror Nights is old enough to drink.
It is old enough to drink. It's been way older to drink now. But yeah, so I went to it and it was a good year. It's not as great as some of the past years. Some of the IP houses didn't really pull as well. But they had an Exorcist Believer house down there. And the funny thing was, there had been no movie out for this house that was based on a new movie, right? So since September 1st, this house has been going at least a whole last month.
September 1st?
Halloween Horror Nights officially begins in September.
The movie came out on the 6th.
Yeah.
Oh my
god. Yeah, so imagine all the people that have walked through that before.
Really
the
good
movie.
Marketing, guys.
Yeah, great really Blumhouse. Let's make it about your new movie that's not out. So we actually went the weekend of it coming out, the movie itself. And we went on a Wednesday at one point, and it was too overcrowded, so we didn't get to hit it the first night. And then we went again on a Saturday, where we actually kind of made it through every single house miraculously. And we decided The Exorcist Believer would be the last house we saved for the night, because why not? So we get in line for The Exorcist Believer, and we're sitting in line, and my dad just simply asks, he's like, hey, so has anybody here seen the new Exorcist Believer? And fucking guys turn around and go, it's dog shit. And so we walk through the house, which, after seeing the movie, doesn't make any sense compared to the fucking storyline of the movie. The house itself has way more fucking demons in it. The beginning of it has like a rabid demon dog in a barn that's screaming, and I'm like, that's not in the movie.
So generic haunted house.
And then the haunted house ends with just Satan winning in the end.
Yeah, Satan.
So it's way different from the movie itself. So it was my least favorite House of Horror Nights. Fucking, okay. How do you fuck so, that up?
That was definitely supposed to be a different house, and they had The Exorcist Believer coming up, and they're like, just slap The Exorcist Believer.
Yeah, Blumhouse was
they
like...
They couldn't come up with a name to call it, so they were just like, call it Exorcist Believer.
Which one of our movies have we not made a haunted house? Oh, The Exorcist. Dude, that's coming out today. Yeah, but we haven't made it a house. Fuck.
Oh my god.
So, yeah, the house wasn't good, which, you know, made me go, well, the movie can't be good. And yeah, after seeing it today, I didn't enjoy this at all. How about you?
No.
This movie is kind of everything I feared it would be. The original Exorcist feels like a documentary. It's one of those, like you said, lightning in a bottle films where it's got this grounded realism to it in a way to where there is no big CGI demon. There is no CGI girls throwing up black magic into a ceiling. There is no CGI scars or blood. It was practical. You know, they made the makeup look like the skin was actually deteriorating, you know. And the thing about it is it all took place virtually in one house with this little girl upstairs that is slowly getting possessed by a demon itself. And the thing that I love about it is there is a slow progression to the actual exorcism, which is in the last 30 minutes of the movie, arguably.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of scenes of people sitting in a room talking about what's happening.
The movie, obviously the movie's called The Exorcist.
Yeah.
And the whole point is getting to that exorcism. But there's this slow burn lead up. It's a 2-hour long movie. It's a slow burn lead up. And obviously there's conversation about exorcism within like the last hour.
Yeah.
But the first hour of the movie, they don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're doing medical tests. They're doing everything they can, psychiatric evaluations, everything that they can do to determine that this girl is sick. And when the medical research and psychiatric research fails of the time, when that fails, Chris McNeil is forced, basically forced to consider an exorcism. And even she's against it because she's like, she's an atheist. She's, you know, non-religious. And that's the great thing about that movie. It's not trying to convert you or anything. It's just a story of a mother trying to save her child.
Yeah.
And she's running out of options.
Yeah. I know the writer of the original book wanted
Peter Blatty.
He stayed around most of those...
He was a religious guy.
Yeah, he was a very religious guy. So he wanted it to pay respects to the priesthood and, you know, Christianity in general. But William Friedkin, you know, a grounded filmmaker who's made great movies like The French Connection, he's like, well, I'm going to approach it from a realistic perspective. Yes. Like somebody that's pushed to their limits. And that's what makes it great. This movie's the opposite in a lot of ways, and it kind of just missed the point of what The Exorcist was supposed to be as a film, like you said. And so, we're gonna go through it, don't worry, we're gonna break down what makes it so fucking dog shit, because like we did with all the Halloween films, and we both don't like David Gordon Green very much, as you can tell, but we're gonna try to go through it, we're gonna explain
especially
our frustrations. Yeah, especially for this, and, I guess we'll just dig into this delicious pile of garbage. So the movie opens with Leslie Odom Jr. in Haiti. Him and his wife are there. He's a photographer that's taking pictures of the land and the culture and everything like that.
The first fucking thing you see in the movie, it's two dogs fighting.
Yep.
Guess what that is? It's a fucking callback to the original movie.
Yep.
Where Max von Sydow's standing there in the... I don't know where he is.
He's in Iraq.
In Iraq?
Or Iraq, yeah.
He's in the Middle East, standing in the desert, and he sees two dogs fighting. That's the fucking callback.
Yep. That's the
most inconsequential scene of the fucking movie.
Remember when it opened in the original and it was all to foreshadow, you know, Pazuzu? He finds the little figurine, he looks up at the statue, he makes that connection. And, you know, they talk about how he went through an exorcist before and he's all shaky because he knows what it means. And then this one's two dogs fighting. And then Leslie Odom Jr.'s wife gets a nice little seance, which was a fun, nice little sequence.
Yeah, I would say for the most part, the opening
was okay.
It was okay. Like, it wasn't... The movie wasn't complete dog shit all the way through.
Yeah. It only got
there. Were some nice parts.
There were some okay parts through it. But after that, you know, they decide, well, they're going to stay in this hotel one last night. Then an earthquake hits Haiti, which destroys all the infrastructure. CGI buildings collapse.
Yes.
And he goes to find his wife, who is dying, and he's forced to make a difficult choice. They are not able to save both of them, so save your unborn daughter or save the wife. And then it cuts to black.
Yes.
And cut... 13 years later to these two different...
It kind of fucked me up to realize that 2010 was 13 years ago.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
That was fucked up.
I'm so old now. Anyway, so we cut back to modern day. Leslie Odom Jr.'s daughter is going through her mother's stuff. They kind of have this little weird relationship where it's like they love each other, respect each other, but you can tell something's definitely off between them. Because there's decent chemistry between Leslie Odom Jr. and this girl. I think her acting when she's not possessed is very good. But we'll talk about her possession later. But it's a nice little dynamic that's set up in the beginning of the movie. Then we cut to this extremely white family that just... It's basically kind of written to just be like, you know, white people suck, which I do love characters like that in some movies. Because it's like a very religious, like, I'd say, obviously, Republican ties kind of family.
Very, like, suburban white family.
White conservative family, yeah.
Not, you know, decent upbringing, relatively normal kids.
Maybe racist?
Yeah.
They do, they weirdly play around with that.
It's definitely implied that the family's, like, kind of eyeballing Leslie Odom Jr.
Which is just so odd to put in a movie like this.
Well, there's another thing about this movie that's very odd, Hayden.
What?
Fucking really long monologues about bullshit.
Yeah, because Leslie Odom Jr. gives a monologue towards the beginning with his daughter, and he's, like, trying to apologize to her and stuff. And then when her and the friend go to class, and she's talking to her friend in the back, he's like, hey, just vouch for us. We're going to go out to the woods and perform a seance. Just say we're studying at your house. So then they leave, they go out into the woods, and the last thing we see of these two little girls is their little chemistry bonding moments where we're supposed to root for them. You remember how Reagan, there's that slow buildup that she's just this innocent girl, that she's playing with the Ouija board, and is like, I'm talking
she's
to
like,
Captain Howdy.
I found this Ouija board. Yeah. I'm talking to Captain Howdy. You ever played with a Ouija board before, Mom?
There's a long setup before she's possessed, right? Because, again, you have to build that with these characters. But they showed fucking Catherine way more than the other girl. And so you're just kind of like, well, they just came together and performed a seance after that. There's no build-up to where I should really care like it was with Reagan whatsoever. It's just weird. And especially, I think that's what the biggest problem was, two demon possession. Because now you have to focus on two demon girls.
Yes.
And you've already, I get your, what conflict they were setting up from the beginning with that, obviously. But now you have to deal with the fact that you have to develop two characters. Whereas with Reagan, you can develop that one character and their slow progression mental possession. Because every time it cuts back, one of them is either further than the other, or it's just fucking, like, they don't care at that point.
One thing that the movie, the original movie, did really well, what, like you said, that slow buildup. Mm-hmm. Like, it shows Reagan kind of having some trouble. She takes her to the hospital, and she's, like, kind of fighting against the doctors. And for us, in this movie, it's like, fuck it, spoilers. So they do their little seance, and then they disappear for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then there's, like, a little bit of the movie where it's like, oh, we gotta find him, which... In the end, what the fuck was that about?
Because,
So as soon as the girls get back, it's like immediately the shit starts happening. Like one of them slaps a window really hard and breaks it.
Yep.
That's Angela, I think. And then he takes her back to the house, and she's doing all this weird shit where she's like flicking the lights off and on and everything. And it's like, this wasn't, like, I get it. They're going to have to change some things from the original just to modernize it and everything. But, like, why make this change so sudden? It's a lot more interesting when the change is, like, slow and gradual.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure this is only an hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Which, we already know this is going to be a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Blum and David Gordon Green were talking about it during press for Halloween.
Yeah.
But obviously, they weren't going to be able to spread this one story across three fucking movies. And they kind of felt like, they fucking rushed this one because there was no fucking build-up or anything.
Nope. So once they're found is where the movie really starts to take a dive. Because I get, like, what they're doing at first with the parents, like, pointing blame at each other.
Yes.
The fucking white dad at one point's like, it's got to be homeless people that are the problem. And I'm like, what social commentary is that? That
David
homeless
Gordon
people
Green
suck
just really
or
fucking
what?
Hates homeless people,
apparently he does. He walks around LA every day and just hates them. That's weird.
He's like Patrick Bateman. He just kills homeless people for fun.
God. Fuck you, David Gordon Green. Anyways, after that, they have that big search party. They can't find him. Of course, you know, he's trying to find reason with the nurse character who's religious.
Leslie Odom Jr.'s character is very, like, calm throughout it all.
Which is weird.
It's very much a contrast because I feel like, you know, the husband and wife, they're all panicky, they're scared, and then Leslie Odom Jr., he's calm the whole time. And I think it's definitely trying to play on how relationships are built within a family of two parents and some kids, and then a single parent. It's because they're trying to play on how they're going to be a lot more connected and everything. And it's strange. And then there's a reveal later in the movie that kind of details why Leslie Odom Jr. might be so detached from it anyways.
Yeah.
Which is
just fucking weird. Anyway, so once they're found, the two of them go off to their separate lives. So I was kind of telling Danny about it. So there's a nice little scene between Leslie Odom Jr. and his daughter where he's asking her, like, well, what happened to where you disappeared? And she's like, well,
I went to use the bathroom.
Yeah, we lit a candle and, you know, we had my mother's locket. So that way we had a piece to connect with somebody from beyond.
They were trying to hypnotize her to be able to talk to her.
Yeah, but she's like, but I needed that scarf you took from me because that's a piece of her to connect with her. Because when I went, no one was there. And I'm like, oh, so you just got trapped in the fucking, it's hell, basically.
You know, remember that movie we watched a little while ago? The Hand.
Oh, Talk to Me. Yeah.
This reminded me.
That's reminded me of Talk to Me.
Obviously, they weren't
the same. So after that, fucking, they have this sequence where it's like showing them, you know, saying their little like Latin backwards demonic language, whatever, and it's cutting with the Pazuzu face, which it had the Pazuzu face
too.
From the original, and then a really bad CGI one in there.
Yeah!
It took me out of the movie. And then it cuts behind Leslie Odom Jr. and the demon's sitting on the bed. The demon's sitting on the bed through a reflection and then goes away.
I wish
and I was like,
that.
Oh, okay, the little white girl fucking doesn't want to brush her teeth. She's like, can I sleep with you, mommy? And so they go to bed. Next day, Leslie Odom Jr. tries to make a nice little meal of pancakes for his daughter. She bleeds, has a period everywhere on her bed, and he's like, baby, you need to go get washed up. She puts her in the bathroom.
Pees. This is where well, there was blood she bleeds too. Later.
Yeah, oh, okay. Well, there was blood on the sheets too. Did you notice that?
Was there? Yeah. I know there was blood in the bathroom because mm-hmm. She had like ripped off one of her fingernails or something.
Yeah. And so they fucking cut back to Catherine or whatever the fuck her name was that is at Catherine, church. Yeah. And she's acting all weird, demonic, possessed, everything like that. And she goes outside at one point while they're getting the body and blood of Christ. Now, remember this. This is important for later, Danny. The body and blood of Christ. So.
I remember. I saw the trailer.
Leslie Odom Jr. looks around for his daughter. She has a little seizure on the floor after she puts the scarf around him and basically knocks his ass to the ground against the bed.
Fucking bashes his head against the bed frame.
She gets taken into the hospital and is strapped down, and then we cut back to Catherine, who comes walking up. She's bleeding too and goes, the body and the blood? The body and the blood?
She
and
also
it
covered
is,
herself with the juice.
Yeah, the wine juice or whatever, and it's so bad. It's so bad.
Standing in the... walks out into the middle of the church while the pastor's giving his sermon. And he's just like looking at her, and the whole time he's like getting uncomfortable and slowly stops talking, and her parents like run out and they're like, Catherine, and she just standing there screaming, body in the blood, and you know what it fucking reminded me of? Red rum.
Yep. So after that, she's admitted to the hospital too, and the two of them are like, well, what do we do, you know, like the scientist, it's again the same thing as the first movie. Well, you know, psychologically we can't predict anything, medically we can't find anything wrong.
Yeah, you know what the problem with that is? At least the first fucking movie showed us all the testing.
Yeah, they never...
This movie, they don't show... Like, obviously, they don't have to, and we're supposed to just guess, I guess, but, like, they fucking don't show any of the real testing, and it's you're just supposed to assume that, and...
Yeah, it's not great. Weirdest part of the whole fucking thing for me was they have a sequence where the nurse, the next door neighbor nurse, comes in and is like doing tests, and then fucking the demon possessed Leslie Odom Jr.'s daughter is like, says the name of the saint of the
Saint Mary Xavier.
Yeah, says the name of like the unborn daughter that she was gonna have before she became a nun, and then fucking CGI blood through a blanket, and she just laughs about it. And so they ultimately decide, like, hey, why don't we just bring the girls home and let's, you know, try and work with them on their own and stuff. And the neighbor comes in and is like, well, hey, Leslie Odom Jr., I'm gonna give you this religious textbook. And he's like, I don't believe in a god, blah blah blah, you know, same thing as obviously Chris McNeil in the first movie.
She walks up to him in the yard, and she hands him the book that Chris McNeil wrote. It's a mother's explanation or something is what it's called. And she's like, oh, you asked me if I've seen anything like this before. I haven't, but other people have. It's like, all right.
Whatever.
So he takes the book inside, starts to read it because she tells him of that all the stuff. And he starts to read it because he needs an answer.
Yeah.
And it's a fucking montage. It's a montage of him doing research and reading and everything.
And watching video.
Watching an interview with a young Chris McNeil. There was some CG there for sure.
Definitely, because that's not her at all.
Yeah. So he's watching an interview with a young Chris McNeil and everything. The religious nurse lady and his neighbor, who's like a kind of an oddball spiritual guy. They come over and they're helping him like get stuff researched, and eventually he goes, tracks down Chris McNeil. 91 years old, Ellen Burstyn.
And you know, look, Ellen Burstyn is a Hollywood sweetheart. I get that. She's made so many great films over the years. I love
Grandma Needs a Break.
I love some of the movies that she's been in. Requiem for a Dream, she's great in. Jane isn't here anymore. Like, it's just fucking awesome. She's had a great career, obviously. She has a cameo in Interstellar that I love. It's great.
Oh, really?
But here's the thing. 91 years old, and you're trying to do almost the Laurie Strode effect with her.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And
100%.
I know she's 91, and trying to act at that age is hard for a lot of people, but a lot of it got into, okay, Grandma, let's get you off to bed territory for me.
Oh, man. I mean, let's talk about the line.
You remember how in the original Exorcist, everybody, that what they, what, you know, fucking they, Jason Miller and Max von Sydow do is like a noble act. They're trying to cast a demon out of this little girl,
no,
you know?
No, what they did was they pushed, Chris McNeil, they pushed her out of the room and said, no girls allowed!
Yeah. So remember how they did this noble act where they both died in the process of getting this demon out of her daughter.
One of them became possessed and jumped out the window.
So, Ellen Burstyn says the reason that she never saw the original Exorcist is because she wasn't a part of their patriarchy.
Yeah. Clearly.
Oh, it hurts. Yeah, it cringes so bad.
That's exactly why. It's not because they were fucking saving your life.
Yeah, they didn't want to expose you to the shit that your daughter would be going through.
No, it's the boys' club. You know, the exorcism is a boys' club. It's where all the boys get around and just perform exorcisms.
I fucking hate
Max
that.
Max von Sydow died for nothing. Your daughter.
He died because he was part of the patriarchy.
Yeah, he died because he was a part of the patriarchy. Jason Miller as Damian Karras. I mean, he got possessed and jumped out a window. Sounds like patriarchy.
Sounds like the patriarchy. Why would the demon pick a guy? It's just so bad.
I'd have to rewatch the original, but I think there was like a line from, it might have been Ellen Burstyn. I can't honestly remember, but I swear to God there was a line of like, you stay out here. You don't need to see this.
Yeah.
That's like, that's very reasonable. Nobody should have to go through something that traumatic.
Nobody should have to watch their daughter go through that. That's awful. It's a dumb line. And then Chris is like, well, you know, I have to see these girls for myself because I'm an expert on all these things. And she goes on about how I haven't seen my daughter Reagan because she never forgave me for writing that book. And, you know, the whole time I'm thinking in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, Linda Blair's not coming back. This movie kind of ruined her career almost.
So, I mean, we're already into spoiler territory. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Linda Blair is in the end of this movie.
Yep.
And I only knew that because I looked on Wikipedia.
Ah.
She's listed as a very small cameo. Yeah. Two more movies. Anyways.
So they decide to go and visit Leslie Odom Jr.'s daughter, who's locked up in the asylum still.
Yeah, yep.
And she's, you know, crawling around.
Hannibal Lecter behind the glass door.
Emma Burstyn is like, she knows who I am. I'm like, yeah, the demon? Out of the several demons in hell knows who you are?
To be fair, it did carve Reagan into the wood behind
us. I guess,
But still.
There's 1,000 demons. Well, over fucking more than that in hell.
Yeah.
It can't be the same exact one that knows you.
It's Pazuzu. At least they didn't fucking say
it. Yeah, I would have cringed even harder, but thank God. She comes up to the window and is like, they're waiting for you, or Reagan's waiting for you, or whatever. And so then they're like, well, where's the little white girl? Oh, the white family thought they could take care of her at home.
Yeah.
And then they get there, and clearly they're fucking
all cowering.
Yeah.
The husband's in one of the rooms cowering by himself, and then the wife and they have two more kids. They're all cowering in the kitchen. And I think Leslie Odom Jr. is still walking around the house trying to help the family. Chris, Ellen Burstyn, I'm not even going to call her Chris McNeil. Ellen Burstyn walks up to follow the little girl into her bedroom.
Yep.
And she's talking to the little girl, trying to expel the demon out of her because apparently she's an expert on exorcist, despite saying that she isn't able to perform exorcisms.
Yep.
Great
logic.
So the little girl, you know, pushes her back, runs over into the corner, starts to cower a little bit. Then she jumps up and grabs a crucifix and stabs Ellen Burstyn in the fucking eyes multiple times.
And Ellen Burstyn's trying her best to sell that her eyes have been stabbed out, but the whole time she's just going, oh, oh, ah, and I'm just
Grandma, no.
But Leslie Odom Jr. comes in, what did you do? And then she gets taken to the hospital and fucking has to wear just these little eye covers the
rest of
the movie. David Bowie.
Just like that music video.
And then both girls are obviously been admitted to the asylum, and it's like, well, now we have no choice but to turn to an exorcism. It's our last resort. Instead of organically getting to this, they just instantly jump into that, we just gotta find the Christian reason for all this. And Ellen Burstyn even gives a speech sitting in a hospital bed, like, you know,
she's
the reason
they're looking at, just looking straight ahead because she's got those fucking eye covers on.
Yeah.
She's given this fucking grandma-ass monologue about some bullshit. There's nothing being said.
She's just like, isn't it great? We all go to church to be together because there are people there and people from beyond. Yeah, and I'm just like, okay, so the first one that presented Christianity as just like an option in the end, yes. This one's full on like the power of God. And it's like, well, yeah. You missed the whole point the original was trying to make.
Yes.
And no, this isn't an anti-Christian message or anything. As somebody that is Christian, there are good Christian movies out there, but by God, we need movies sometimes where that's presented as like an option because it makes it more interesting in the plot. Oh my God, Jason Blum, did you miss the point?
Jason Blum wouldn't understand any fucking themes or messages if you spelled them out perfectly clear for him.
Yeah. So both girls are then brought in to, I don't remember, Leslie Odom Jr.'s house, and they fucking tie him to two chairs in the middle of a room.
The chairs are screwed into the floor.
Yep.
There's a chalk pattern on the floor, which was drawn by a medicine lady. That's what
I think that's how they describe her too, which is even worse.
Or something about roots.
Yeah.
But yeah, she does a little pattern on the floor, and then the fucking Catholic priest that they were talking to comes up and says to the fucking religious nurse lady, I didn't get cleared. They said I can't do it. I can't do it, guys. And they're like, we need you. We need you to be... Oh, we forgot to talk about how they were forming a whole Avengers team.
Yeah, the old Avengers.
Yes. Leslie Odom Jr. and the mom and the dad and the nurse walk into the regular church and get the pastor from their church to come along. And it's just this whole building the team shit. And it's like, what the fuck? Is this... Oh, fuck. Halloween Kills.
Yeah, Halloween Kills, essentially. Is that what it reminds you of?
Yes. Oh my God. It reminded me of the worst movie of this new trilogy.
And here's another great thing. So, when the priest says that he can't, you know, naturally everybody would probably just be like, well, we could go get another one. Because even if Jason Miller doesn't get, like, you know, told by the, you know, Catholic Church, you can do this.
There's other religions.
Yeah, there's other religions she could have tried. But in this, it's presented as, well, since we all believe in the power of Christ, we can just do it together. And I thought, honestly, they were going to be able to do it as a group. And then the message would be flipped out the table that, oh, you don't need a priest to do it. The power of God himself and belief will do it. But then a priest comes in at the ending anyways. The priest comes back in like his fucking Tony Stark moment.
Yeah.
And then he dies.
He has the glove with all the fucking gems in it, and he's about to snap, and then immediately gets his fucking neck snap.
CGI neck snap, yeah. And so then, it's presented as a choice where the fucking demons are like, well, we have some interesting information, Leslie Odom Jr. Your daughter, you didn't want her. You wanted to save your wife instead, and you've had to live every day with your unholy child. And it's like, they're trying to break him, obviously, through
it. Yeah, it's the same kind of shit that you would see in any of these, where it's like, they're just repeating all these terrible things that, like, the little white girl, the whole time she's just, like, screaming, what about me? What about me? Yeah. What about me?
Yeah, because the demons are like, you have to save one and kill the other, and I'm like, oh, it's a trick. It's a trick. Anyone could see this coming a mile away.
Remember in the original fucking movie how it was Damian Karras who was being taunted by being told, oh, you could have saved your mother, and guess what they fucking do? They use his mom's voice to taunt him.
Yeah.
They don't fucking use the dead wife's voice in this movie to taunt Leslie Odom Jr. No, that would have been fucking cool.
Yeah, but that might be smart writing. We can't have that in Blumhouse. So, anyways, after the priest is dead, then it's kind of like, well, Leslie Odom Jr. goes and gets discovered and is like, hey, baby, you can fight through this. You know, I know you're in there and stuff. And he's actually, like, saying how much...
Her neck.
Yeah, they're having a flashback sequence about him raising her and stuff. It's supposed to be, like, that come together nice
wholesome moment.
Yeah,
there's a flashback sequence to parts of the movie that he wasn't at.
Yeah, which is just weird. And so, you know... Through that, I was like, oh, okay, so maybe it's going to have a happy ending, which I'll hate.
Yeah,
but
maybe it's going to be some, like, love perseveres or something, which, like, that's fine.
Yeah, and then instead, the white dad does exactly what I expected him to do, and he goes, I choose you! And so then it seems like, oh, no, fucking...
The white girl's going to live.
The white girl's going to live. And so Leslie Odom Jr.'s daughter floats up to the ceiling and spews black goo into a portal, and then they both come down, and... fucking for like 2 seconds the white girl is alive, and then it cuts to her and I guess hell basically, and she gets pulled down by all the demons.
Yeah, what the fuck was that about?
I don't know. I don't know what that was even trying to be.
What the fuck hell, was that about?
Hell is a fucking abandoned place in the woods.
Yeah, and it looked like a fucking weird-ass tunnel. And not to mention how the fucking vapors that got sucked out of them by
those look so bad.
By the medicine lady. What the fuck was that about?
I don't know. Why do we need ghost vapor? And did you notice for 2 seconds it, like, formed the devil's horns?
Oh, did it? I hadn't noticed.
Yeah, I was like, oh, you're annoying. Trying to be so on the nose with it.
And there,
remember in the original when it's that flash of light and you see the statue for a couple seconds?
Yeah, she's standing there with her arms
out. Yeah, arms out and stuff.
And there's the fucking statue of Pazuzu and it's like a really cool shot in the movie.
Here it's ghost vapor, CGI ghost vapor.
And, you know, there's this whole part where they're, like, shaking the house and everything, and you can see all these different, like, in this new movie, there's all these different, like, I'm guessing it's... You remember the movie Possession?
Mm-hmm.
How there were scenes where it was, like, kind of body horror?
Yeah.
Where, and I guess it kind of happened in Talk to Me, too, with the little boy, he's in hell, and there's, like, he's wrapped in all the skin and everything. There's some of that in this movie.
But it looks like shit. What
the fuck was that?
Yeah. So after this, the white girl then dies, and Leslie Odom Jr.'s daughter comes back, and it's like a little, oh my goodness, baby, you're alive kind of thing, and the white family's freaking out. And so then it fucking, I thought it was going to end with just Leslie Odom Jr. hugging his daughter. I'm like, okay, that's a kind of a cool spot to end on.
The little white girl's getting all the attention in the other room. They get taking the paddles to her, and the pastor walks out and just like stares at Leslie Odom Jr. And it's like, what are you implying?
What are you implying? Again, why the fucking weird racism in this movie? It's not needed. Like, why? What is the commentary for that? But anyways, so after that, I was like, oh, the movie's gonna end with, like, Leslie Odom Jr. hugging his daughter. And, like, you know, it's on him for a good few seconds. I'm like, oh, it's supposed to be, like, he knows, like, what this kind of means now to him. And so after that, then, they cut back to the nurse who gives a final monologue.
Yeah.
And again, it's the same thing about go to church, kids.
It's like, I'm guessing it's, like, a month later. I wasn't... paying attention to if there was any text on screen, so I'm guessing this was like a month later or something.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a debriefing where the police are trying to figure out like what happened and everything.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, and so then the movie just basically ends.
Yeah, it shows the little girl going to school, and it shows the empty chair, and the husband and wife. I'm guessing they're divorced now.
Yeah, because they're probably
meeting up
divorced
at a coffee shop or something. And then it shows Ellen Burstyn, sitting there with her David Bowie eyes, you know, all covered up. The door opens, and she's like, I think she says, Victor.
Yeah.
Victor, is that you? And then some silence, a woman walks, a body walks into frame, squats down. No, it's me, Mom, Linda fucking Blair.
Yeah.
Linda fucking Blair for, like, a few seconds. They embrace...
movie ends.
Tubular Bells.
Do, 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 do.
So, Tubular Bells was used 3 times in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I personally didn't mind it so much because in the original movie, the way that Tubular Bells was used...
It's not even in the horror scene.
Yeah, it was literally just her walking, and she, like, this is where she spots Damien Karras for the first time.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, okay. And in this movie, it also, it might have been used in a horror scene, and I don't remember.
It was used when they were coming up to
it was used
Chris
when
McNeil.
Yeah, he was
driving. They're like, the kids might not understand who this old woman is.
Yeah, so I guess it was kind of their way of being like, oh, this is his Damien Karras moment where he, like, first... I didn't mind it so much because I thought they were going to, like, abuse the fucking song. Like, use it way too much. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I just want to say... this movie puts a lot of score in scenes where there is no need for a score whatsoever.
It was very, very noisy.
Yeah, for no reason. Because remember, the original barely has a score in it.
Yeah.
It is just natural sound. And most of it is just letting you be in the moment of possession and stuff.
Yeah.
Fucking final...
The scariest part of that fucking movie is... Or not the scariest part, but to some people probably, is the...
Yeah.
And stuff like that. All the very... subtle noises that really get under your skin over time. That's some of the best stuff. You know, it'd be awesome if it was really loud all the time with a lot of music.
Yeah. That's hurt. I feel defeated after this. It's just kind of like...
I hope Mike Oldfield got a lot of money from that.
He probably did. He probably gets a lot every time it's used. But
yeah.
This is really I know Blumhouse gets a bad rep for bad remakes and bad movies, and I know there are people that are like, well, Blumhouse isn't that bad. They put out a couple good ones every once in a while, but it's getting really hard for me to believe that at this point, especially when Jason Blum is just bidding on IPs that he didn't understand the fucking original point of, like Halloween, like this. I wouldn't be shocked in a couple years he got Friday the 13th or some shit, or Nightmare on Elm Street.
I think A24 is Friday the 13th.
Thank God. Thank God.
But Nightmare on Elm Street is being shopped around. I don't know who's currently in talks.
Oh, you bet Jason Blum will be going after that. Oh,
definitely. Yeah.
But yeah, he's going to just do this forever, where he's going to try to remake horror classics, do it 10 times worse, missing the point in the subtext of the original, and just fuck it up. Now, I do want to point something out that I heard after we were leaving this movie. So there was a group of girls, probably in high school, in front of us walking out, and one of them complained there were no kills in this movie.
Yes, there was.
There were no kills in this movie, though.
There was, though. The Catholic priest.
No, there wasn't kills. See, because here's the thing. What Blumhouse has done is it has made people have this expectation that there has to be multiple kills in a movie now.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the younger generation that's not going to understand not every horror movie has to be hack and slash kills or just CGI ghost kills a bunch of people.
Yeah.
They're being harmed mentally by these films because they're just not being like, they can't critically think about this stuff anymore and realize what subtext and any of that means.
Yeah, I don't want to just blame Blumhouse.
Mm-hmm.
They are a big part.
Oh, they're a huge part of it.
But it definitely is an effect of slashers in general as well, because like a lot of slashers do rely on like creative kills in a lot of them.
Yeah.
I
just want to point this out. Hereditary is a movie where the kills are saved towards the end.
There's only a few.
Yeah, there's only a few. Yeah. It's the dad that's killed, the little girl that's killed.
Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween, the original. There's like barely any kills.
And the original Exorcist.
Yeah, only three people die.
Three.
Like, people forget, slashers do not have to just be kill, kill, kill. That's why I don't like the Halloween.
This isn't even a slasher.
Yeah, not at all. This is just like a horror film. The original
wasn't
either.
It was a, paranormal... It's a possession film. It's its own genre. It's an exorcism film.
Yeah.
And that's its own genre to itself, basically. Because there's so many bad attempts at it.
It's why I don't enjoy the new Halloween films after the 2018 remake. It just becomes a kill fest. And it just feels like they're missing the point of the original. And I get it. You know, some people go to theaters for that, and some people think that's got to be every horror movie. But
that's like it's kind of the appeal of the Saw movies, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, it's creatives just kills.
And lots of kills.
As someone who's seen all of them, that is the appeal, is people just die.
As someone who hates the first one.
But just, it really feels like at a certain point, the more you remake these, the more it gets lost in translation, the point of them. So I just advocate, if you haven't seen this movie yet, just don't go fucking see it. The more money you give this, the more Jason Blum has the power to go, I can remake this.
There's this belief that you should just freely support things even if you don't agree with them.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that. I think if something is shit, you should not support it.
At all.
Because then people might fucking learn and try to make actual good things.
Yeah.
This felt like it had no soul. This felt like the most generic exorcism movie, where if they detached the word exorcist and removed Ellen Burstyn, it could just be put on DVD and thrown out.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I have dug through the $5 movie bin, the $2.75 movie bin, and I have seen movies in those bins that this could have been.
Honestly.
Because, like, you know, there's all of those movies from, like, the 2010s, the early 2000s, like, The Last Exorcism of Emily Rose and shit. All these kinds of movies that do this kind of shit, where it's just missing the point of what The Exorcist was.
Yeah.
It's a humble little movie, not trying to be anything it isn't. It's got a story that it tells very directly. It's not trying to convince you of anything. It's not trying to scare you, really. It's not trying to scare you.
No,
it's just trying to just show you this story, that this amazing story that this guy wrote.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. This movie, it's a cash grab.
It is. It's a cash grab.
It's for the money, you know, because there hasn't been a new Exorcist. I think there was a TV show that might be good. I don't know.
Yeah, there were two sequels and a prequel. Then another prequel, ironically, that was made.
There was The Exorcist 2, which had Linda Blair in it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like set 4 years later, I guess. There was The Exorcist 3, which has a cult following. It's based on a sequel book that William Peter Blatty had written called Legion, and he directed it himself. The ending is not the same as the book, but that's a whole different topic in and of itself. And then there was, I think, Exorcist...
This is a prequel, I know that.
Exorcist 4?
It has Stellan Skarsgård in it, some shit like that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so... Again, a trilogy out of this just does not sound like a great idea financially whatsoever.
Man. They're... Every single... I would say Exorcist 3 is probably the most successful one just because of there's a lot of people who... I haven't seen it. I know it's very...
I have no interest to see the sequels.
Yeah, I know there's a lot... There's a big fan following for the third one, but, like, I... You know, what point is there in making a sequel... I guess since The Exorcist 3 is based on a book that William Peter Blatty wrote, there is some interest in that.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else is like, what's the fucking point? You're not going to live up to the original.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
So, I mean, the Exorcist Believer, huh? What a film, huh?
Can't wait until the next two come out.
I can wait.
No, we're going to see them and we're going to enjoy them.
This isn't they're like Halloween.
No, they're going to be our favorite movies. Linda Blair and Ellen Burstyn are going to team up and go hunt ghosts.
She's going to get her eyes back in the next movie.
I kind of want to see her walk around with that Bowie look the whole time.
If she's alive by the time, I guess, because...
I mean...
She is 91.
I haven't paid attention to any news. They might have already filmed or begun filming. I'm not sure. I don't pay attention to that shit anymore. Because I don't want to... You know what's funny? I don't think Jason Blum has tweeted since this came out.
Nope, he hasn't said a damn
Dude's
thing.
Dude's fucking seething
If anything, he has retweeted the haunted house pictures.
The last tweet on his account, last time I checked, was on the 6th. And it was nothing in reference to The Exorcist Believer.
He knows he fucked up.
I doubt it.
You can't Black Christmas 2019 your way out of this one, buddy. You fucked up.
He's going to be on Twitter like, oh, everyone hates my movie. Yeah. Everyone hates it.
Also got to point out, we could have had an Evil Dead house in Orlando this year.
Oh, yeah.
But that got put in California instead because the demand for The Exorcist Believer needed to be in Orlando, according to Jason Blum. So fuck him for not giving me an Evil Dead Rises house. I'm so mad.
That would have been awesome.
It would have been fucking awesome. That's a way better movie.
Way better.
So do you want to give the score first since this is, you know, one of your favorite movies being remade?
Fuck. I don't know, like 1 out of 10?
Yeah.
2 out of 10, maybe?
Yeah, I'm giving it a 2 out of 10, for sure.
I would say 2 out of 10 is closer for me, just because, like, it wasn't the worst thing I've seen.
Which is, you know what's ironic? I hated Halloween Kills, and this got a worse rating than Halloween Kills.
Well, yeah, because at least Halloween Kills has some merit.
Some. Not a lot, but some.
At least there's something entertaining in that movie.
Yeah, but this is bad. Please don't go see it if you haven't. And don't force yourself to watch it because it's bad. Wait till it's on streaming for all I fucking care.
Fucking pirate it for all I care.
Yeah, pirate it, honestly. It's one of those... you know, we got Killers of the Flower Moon in 2 weeks, thank God, so I can refresh my brain
from all
this.
FNAF movie, baby!
Yeah, and then FNAF, but fucking... Oh my God!
There's a Thanksgiving slasher film
directed by Eli Roth,
coming out this year.
There's a all silent action movie being made by John Woo with no dialogue that's coming out.
Strange.
Yeah, very strange. There's a new Alexander Payne film called The Holdovers with Paul Giamatti. I'm very much looking forward to seeing that. So there's a couple things still coming out I want to check out. Aquaman could give two fucks about.
Aquaman coming out?
Yeah, Wonka could give two fucks about.
That's going to be great. You know it's going to be great.
The Marvels. I gave up on Marvel. I'm not even watching Loki season 2.
I thought Marvels came out already.
No. It was supposed to come out, and then it got delayed to... Now November, I think, so...
Wasn't there a movie that was supposed to come out at the same time as Killers of the Flower Moon, but it got pushed back to, like, next year?
Dune was supposed to come out, remember?
Dune! That's what it is. Yeah, I forgot about that.
None of those are fucking getting reviewed, but we just wanted to throw those out.
Yeah.
Where our interest is.
Killers of the Flower Moon might be worth it.
It might be. But again, we wrap this shit up for a reason, too.
Yeah, true.
It's got to be either we hate this or we can talk about how good it is.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a movie that has merit and reason to talk about like this. Because this,
yeah, like
this has so much.
The FNAF movie is going to be the best movie of all time. We're gonna talk about it. We're going to say how great it is. I'm Golden Fred.
To be continued. But yeah, so 2 out of 10 for both of us. Well,
I feel bad for Ellen Burstyn.
I do feel bad for her. This is like one of her last acting roles.
Dude, I swear to God, Jason Blum's gonna have Max von Sydow dug up.
Yeah, he's gonna CGI him back from the dead, and I'm gonna.
He's just gonna no. He's literally gonna just dig his body up and reanimate him. Jason Miller too, and he died in like 2001.
No.
William Friedkin, his body's gonna get dug up.
If William Friedkin was alive, he would have so much to say about this.
I don't know. He might have gone John Carpenter by then and just be like, just give me the money.
Well, I guess, you can return to your audiobook podcast empire. I'll go now.
Yeah. Where was I?
I don't know. So how long are you going to be in my car to finish this? What page were you on?
The Legend of Halloween David Gordon Green and Onur Tükel. I think that's how you pronounce it. Based on the motion picture screenplay by John Carpenter and Deborah Hill. I have to restart because I lost
my page. Oh, okay, my bad. Well, I'll wait outside then.
That's a cool school bus.
That is a cool school bus. Wow. Anyways, I'll go outside now.
Yeah. Oh, I'm supposed to read it out loud?
Yeah. That's kind of the point.
Oh, Haddonfield, October 31st. I'm just reading the important parts.
Oh, okay. It's for kids. Okay.
Doctors, they tried. Oh, he killed his sister. The doctors tried. He steals a guy's, like, jumpsuit and a mask, I guess. That's not from the original movie. They never showed that in the original movie. This is a dumb book, Hayden. This is a dumb book. David Gordon Green ruins everything he touches. I hate him.